cutting-edge news and analysis on demand. This is PID Radio.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien races come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody. And welcome to our, well, our lovely new digs, lovely new bunker, and PID Radio 2.0.
That's right. We're back.
You thought you'd gotten rid of us, but we are back, folks.
Like a bad penny, we keep turning up.
Like a bad habit.
Like us, we keep coming back like a song.
I know.
And let's see, we keep going, like a fish. We can stretch this out with cliches for a full hour if we wanted to.
You'd turn us out. Yeah.
Well, we're happy to be back. It's been a long time. Through the summer months, we were really involved in a couple of things. You knew the fact that we moved into a new bunker here, and of course that Sharon's been very occupied with a new job. She's employed at Zimmer Radio of Mid-Missouri now. She's got the office two doors down from mine. And
I'm the internet queen.
Yes, that's not what it says on her business card, but that's essentially what she is. She's the internet queen. So the websites for the radio group have been revamped, and she's been integral in developing the look and stocking the websites with content.
I know. I stock them. I put cans of, veggies up there and some dry goods.
And it's really been the last couple of months have really just been full wall to wall. We've been doing a lot of weekend and evening work, which is not to complain because there are a lot of people, including some close friends of mine, who would do anything to get a job right now.
That's true.
So we're not complaining about that. But now that we've gotten past an event that we were very honored to be a part of, the 3-day radiothon for the University of Missouri Children's Hospital, we now find ourselves with a little more time available to us and a real desire to get back to a regular mm-hmm. schedule of doing PID radio.
We find, you know how you just push, and finally when it's all over, you get to breathe again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really has been almost like, it's that movie Waiting to Exhale.
Yeah.
It's been like that for the whole summer.
Mm-hmm. We've been really pushing toward a couple of different things. And during the summer, we really thought we were going to move back to Indiana, that we were really feeling burdened to be close to Sharon's family. Her mother is 83 now, and we were just a little distressed that we weren't able to afford to get back there to visit. And the management here made us an offer that was, extremely difficult to refuse.
It really was, and frankly, we prayed about it a lot, and we had some friends praying with us. We wanted to know that the decision was the correct one, mm-hmm. not just the financially prudent one.
Right.
But now, so many things since we made the decision, God has given us so many indicators that it was the right decision for now, at least. Mm-hmm. And I say that not because Derek and I have any plans, but we know how God has worked in our lives in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always, we start up on a path and there is no guarantee for us or for any of you listening. When God puts you on a path, he doesn't say, I'm putting you here, just keep walking forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, set it on autopilot and coast.
Exactly. No, I want you to keep walking because there may be a turn and it may come up when you least expect it at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see where this leads, but I will say this, that it was really a blessing to have Sharon there, able to sit down at the table next to me during my broadcasts on Thursday and Friday from the University Hospital. And essentially, it was like doing 4 hours of PID radio there.
So much fun.
In the sense that it was the two of us together, not in the sense that we were discussing politics, because
no.
The focus was really on the hospital here.
Exactly. Which, we didn't tell, think about, oh, gosh, great, I'll go listen to those podcasts. Well, I think that we did record them. I don't know if they're going to be put up as a podcast.
Oh, I do have some of them up already at the
Eagle 939.com. Oh, you do? You are fast.
Well, Justin, our producer, was really fast in getting that stuff recorded and uploaded to our FTP server. And then from there, I today just basically put some links up there. But we had the opportunity to meet some really wonderful people, a young couple in particular toward the end of the day on Friday who whose two children were both patients at the Children's Hospital, one who is still struggling, but they've not let it affect their faith. And almost that's really the amazing thing, that during the 3 days at the Children's Hospital, I met so many people whose children are suffering from what most of us would consider to be really tragic diseases, cystic fibrosis. One young man that I met, a 14-year-old boy who was there with his dad from Kansas City, you know, drove in from Kansas City. He was at his sixth radiothon. You know, this was our first year doing it at Zimmer Radio. He was born with his guts outside his body, his intestines, his stomach, everything outside his body. And he was telling me about how he's now in training to play basketball for high school basketball team next year.
And yet he has no, if I remember what he said, he has no abdominal muscles.
Right, right.
So that has to be so difficult. There are a lot of things you do when you use those muscles.
Well, and when you play basketball, sometimes it can get physical when you're going for those rebounds. He has to wear a flak jacket in order to protect his intestines when he plays. And yet he didn't see this as an obstacle, just part of his daily routine. And his father was standing there beaming. And, they were just, happy that they could be there to encourage other people to support the work of the hospital. And I know we're going on a bit about this, but we were just so impressed, first of all, that it's a not-for-profit hospital. Secondly, that the money that we were soliciting from listeners, none of it is taken out for administrative costs. And that all of it stayed in our area. So we felt very comfortable in talking to people and in really encouraging them to give.
And, but you know what? I don't think this is off topic at all. I know it's not in the topic that we listed for tonight, and we'll get there, believe me. Because the reason I don't think it's off topic is because so many of the people we did speak with, they are believers.
Yes.
And this has, if anything, it has increased their faith.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like a wuss talking to some of these people, and not just because they were taking health issues, that I would consider crumbling issues and just smiling throughout, but their faith in the Lord and just taking his grace day by day. Oh, gosh, humbling.
It really was. We spoke with several young people who are battling cystic fibrosis, which, of course, is a disease that affects the mucus of the body in a couple of ways. Number one, it makes it difficult for them to absorb nutrients from their food properly, so they've got to take enzymes on a daily basis with every meal. But secondly, of course, it makes it very, very difficult to breathe, and they've got to put on a jacket a couple of times a day that basically vibrates the mucus away from the linings of their lungs so that they can cough it up and spit it out. Imagine yourself having to sit on, those paint shakers in the, hardware store when they put the paint cans in there to mix the colors. That's basically what it's like. For 15 minutes a day, twice a day, these little kids have to go through this.
We've got a video online that demonstrates it.
Yes, yes. And we'll post a link
to that.
Yeah, in the show notes. We posted it to YouTube. Sharon, that was one of the things that she did as the web content manager out there at the Radiothon, was getting video and photos of what was happening on the ground posted to the internet almost in real time. But I, for years have battled allergies. And when I was a kid, in fact, my asthma was such that I had to use an inhaler, had to go get asthma shots a couple of times a week, once a week, two shots a week, one in each arm, for years. And there were times when I just, poor me, I've got flat feet, I got to wear these goofy shoes with the arch supports in them, and I can't play sports like other kids. But these kids are just going about their daily lives and with great big smiles on their face saying, I got to get the snot out of my lungs a couple times a day. It's like, And knowing that their expected life will be only about 36 years, boy, there were a couple of times during the radiothon I just broke down and I couldn't talk, because here I was thinking about the times in my life when I felt sorry for myself for what I deal with, which is nothing compared to what those kids deal with. And again, talking to their parents and having so many of their parents say that they feel as though God had chosen them for a special mission. And especially hearing that come from the mouths of a young couple from southeast of Colombia, a young boy, their son, was born with three holes in his heart, Down's syndrome, and leukemia. And the father, who himself has an artificial leg below his right knee, saying, I'm just going to enjoy it. You know, I've always wanted a son. You know, we got two girls, but, you know, like every guy, I just wanted a son I could play sports with and hunt with and go fishing with. And I'm right now in the process of restoring a 72 Mustang. And as soon as that's finished, we're going to go driving. Well, I'm still going to do those things. And I'm going to do those things as long as he's with us. And I don't care how long that is, but because we don't go anywhere where somebody that doesn't even know him comes up and says, God's got something special planned for your son. Mm-hmm. And they believe that. And he said, and you know, here's the thing, 85% of the families, couples whose children are special needs will wind up divorced because of the stress. And that young couple said, it's brought us closer together. It has absolutely been a gift from God. And again, when you meet people like that face to face and talk with them, it's impossible not to believe in miracles.
I know. We saw that over and over again. One of the last couples, families actually, mm-hmm. that we interviewed, their son had been told that he had, was it leukemia, the same time that he found out that his mother had breast cancer?
Yes, it was. That was exactly the case, right? Yeah. He was dealing with leukemia cancer while
the
mother was
dealing. Yeah, he looked like he was maybe 8, 9 years old.
Right. And the three, the mother, the father, and the son, were wearing a T-shirt that he designed that had these scary-looking shark-like creatures with big, sharp, pointy, nasty teeth. And it said, it's okay to be scared, but you have to be brave. And his name was Tim.
Mm-hmm. And, it was Tim.
So we said, okay.
You're tearing up already thinking about it. You know, there were many, many tears shed over the last Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of last week. And they were tears of joy. They were tears of compassion. They were tears of just sadness in some cases, because not all the kids survive.
No, no. And what was really powerful were the parents whose children died at the hospital, who came back to support the work of the hospital. And that was really tough. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful that our morning guy talked with the mother who came back to read a poem about her 10-and-a-half-month-old son who died almost exactly 1 year ago at the Children's Hospital here in Columbia. That was really tough.
It was. Well, you know what? I have to say, my husband has a very gentle heart. Hmm. And so I have seen you weep, you know, over different circumstances because you have a very tender heart. What I found so amazing was this room full of jocks.
Right, because
we were all weeping.
We weren't the only radio station there. We have nine radio stations in Mid-Missouri as part of our group, and four of them were involved in this radiothon: the talk radio station, which is ours, the Eagle 93.9, our rock station, KCMQ, our top 40 station, Y107, and one of our country stations, Cat Country 94.3, out of Jefferson City. And yeah, during the course of the 3 days, all of us, the rock jocks, the top 40 jocks, the country guys, you know, Tom and I and you on the talk station, were all getting weepy. And back in the studio, Justin, our producer, was sending us an instant message. We had set up with Skype, using Skype to instant, mm-hmm. send instant messages back and forth about where we were going with the programs. And he was sending notes back about, you know, I feel like such a wuss. I can't hold it. I can't keep it together.
It was amazing. It was, you know, some of the neatest 3 days I think I've ever spent.
It's the most proud I've been of anything that yeah. I've done in broadcasting. So
and I have to, as we close this segment, we have to tell you, in the tease for tonight's show, we mentioned a beard, and you'll see that the video is online. The last half an hour or so of the radiothon on Friday, we had a $5,000 matching funds offer, mm-hmm. from a young businessman who, I mean, he really does, he looks like he's in his mid-20s, if that. He yeah. looks really young. He's got a startup business. We're praying for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an amazing guy, but he spent some time at that hospital. He knows what it's like to be in those rooms for a while, and he was wanting to raise lots of money, so he had made a $10,000 match yeah. at one time, and then in the last half hour, there was a $5,000 match offer. We were trying to get people to donate $5,000. Come on, businessman, write a check for $5,000. And Derek said if somebody would match the $5,000 to make it a total of 10, Derek mm-hmm. would shave his head. Sadly, we missed the mark on that. But we did have one person. A couple of thousand dollar donations. A couple of $1,000 donations. And we did hit the goal for the number of people who were signing up to pledge for the year. So Derek had said if we met those, mm-hmm. he would shave his beard. We have a videotape that you can see online of Derek having his beard shaved off. He had worked for the last, what, 4 or 5 months on that beard?
Well, no, July, I think, is when it started. So July,
August,
September.
Oh, that's right.
August,
he grew
September.
It about 3 days. I forgot that.
Yeah, and for some reason, his vitamins that we're taking or something really worked well. So, but yeah, I'd grown a beard. Sharon actually started this back at the end of June where she was playing with Photoshop, and she put a beard on me just to see if she could do the hair textures correctly. And it looked real, and she said, ooh, that looks good. So I decided to grow it out, and it actually... I'll grow it again because I actually like the way it looks.
Yeah, it's been like about 24 hours now that it's been growing. Well, maybe not even that because you shaved yesterday morning. But we'll post pictures once a week or so and let you see where the beard progress is going. But he gave it up.
Yeah, it was well worth it, and it was a very successful drive. The people we're finding in mid-Missouri are very open and very warm-hearted when it comes to supporting those in need. And it's really difficult when you're hearing about the work of the doctors and nurses at the hospital there from the mouths of the children who've been treated there to say, well, you know, I'll just hang on to this $15, thank you very much, and buy myself a pizza. So it was very successful in that regard. And again, because of the way it was approached, and I've got to confess, back in March when they flew us down to Orlando for the national convention for the Children's Miracle Network, I was a little put off and thought, now, where is this money coming from? Because we flew our station manager, a sales manager, our promotions director, four radio station program directors, and... the development director for the hospital down there. So we flew 8 people down from Columbia and spent 3 days at Disney World at the Coronado Springs Resort. And I'm thinking, okay, where's all this money? Well, apparently those are the corporate underwriters, like Forrester's, a big insurance company. And there are other Disney World, in fact, is a major contributor. So there are big corporate sponsors that underwrite those administrative costs so that when we come back here to mid-Missouri and ask people for donations, that money stays at the hospital and none of the no administrative costs are taken out. So that was easier to do.
Can you tell that we've been passionate about this for days?
Yes, it's been a little, it's been kind of our driving force for the last several months. And now that we're past that, now we will start, you know, working on ideas for next year. But it also allows us time now to get back here in the bunker to another work that we really feel passionately about and consider very important. And that's looking at the events in the world in light of the spiritual war that we know that's taking place around us.
Which brings us to tonight's campout.
Yes.
Where we're going to start out with me and marshmallows. Myanmar, what's going on in Myanmar?
Well, and first and foremost, does that mean that Burma Shave is now Myanmar Shave?
It's Myanmar Shave. Okay. Yes, it is.
So Myanmar is, of course, the source, the site, rather, of
George Bush says it's the most dangerous place in the world right now.
What?
Well, I don't know that I'm quoting him exactly, but he has gone on and on and on for days. Every time I hear him quoted, it's about Myanmar.
Myanmar has been ruled by a military junta for the last 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
They threw out the results of an election in 1990, and they've been ruled by the military there for the last 17 years. The only country that really seems to have any influence on Myanmar is neighboring Thailand, because Thailand depends on Myanmar for a good bit of its energy resources. Myanmar is the site of some rather large developments that are being worked by the state-owned petroleum company from Thailand. And when we started, and when Sharon started doing some research for tonight's program, she discovered very quickly a couple of things. And, of course, number one was an announcement from the first week of August 2006 that the state-owned petroleum company in Thailand had discovered a vast new field of oil and gas in Myanmar.
Well, let me tell you how I found that. It all started with this whole business of George Bush making a big deal out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, suddenly, last week, Myanmar was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember Myanmar being in the news a couple of years ago, just sort of for a very short period of time. And it may have been when it changed its name. I can't remember. But this seemed to come out of nowhere, and it always bothers me when the administration comes out and makes a big to-do out of something that was, until then, frankly, unknown.
Mm-hmm.
As if it's suddenly the biggest thing, you know, bigger than Iraq, but don't look over here, don't look at Blackwater, look at Myanmar, because it's really, really important. So I asked myself, why would he even care? So the first thing I did was go to oil.com
mm-hmm.
and type in Myanmar.
Brilliant.
Popped right up.
Oh, well, it was right here in the telephone book. That is, now maybe we're connecting dots that shouldn't be connected, but it does seem rather interesting that this discovery took place just over a year ago, and not
six weeks later.
And again, this may be an unconnected dot, but it's
our job to connect dots.
Yes.
Force it if we must.
Consider this open source intelligence, what do they call it? OSINT in the intelligence community?
Yes.
Yeah, OSINT, whatever. Anyway, 6 weeks later in Thailand, while the prime minister, I'm not even going to try to say his name, Thaksin something, was at the UN General Assembly for a meeting, the military in Thailand took over the country. So 6 weeks after a significant amount of natural gas and oil was discovered by Thailand's state-run oil company
mm-hmm.
in Myanmar, huh?
mm-hmm.
the government of Thailand is thrown out by the military in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coincidence? We'll have to let you decide on that. The state-owned oil company in Thailand, if you're interested in doing some checking on this. And again, we've got links to some of the basic articles at PIDradio.com, which, by the way, is now up and running again.
It is indeed.
Yes. It is PTT Exploration and Production. P as in Paul, T as in Thomas, T as in Thomas. PTT Exploration and Production is the state-controlled oil and gas company in Thailand. And again, Myanmar is the source of most of the oil and gas used in Thailand.
You know, the protests that we're seeing on the news from Myanmar are led by monks.
Yeah, which is interesting. And why this disturbance in Myanmar now after 17 years of military rule?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this is a new thing.
I know.
So, and why the sudden attention from the West? Again, this is not like this is a new thing. We may be stretching a point here, but and again, I'm just throwing things out there for consideration. The drive for freedom in East Timor was more or less quashed with the arrival of Western forces from Australia, and it happened shortly after the discovery of rather significant mm-hmm. oil and gas fields off the coast of East Timor.
Now, you would not be suggesting, would you, that someone involved with our government would officially or unofficially try to change a regime, would you?
Well,
Orange Revolution.
Yeah, Rose Revolution. it's really disturbing to think that this is what's going on, but I have come to believe that our adventures in Central Asia, and I'm not just referring to Iraq and Afghanistan, but also all the other stands around the Caspian mm-hmm. Sea, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Azerbaijan, because they've got very substantial oil and gas reserves. Not so much about securing the oil and gas future of the United States, because even though it's not been widely reported, a guy who used to work for the U.S. Geological Survey some 15 years ago discovered or wrote a paper that, and I'm going to have to do some more research on this. Should have checked this out before we started the show. He discovered in the Bakken, Bakken formation of eastern Montana, western North Dakota, what may be up to 400 billion barrels of reserves, of possible reserves.
You know, I think it's something like that.
But essentially the number is like double the proven reserves in Saudi Arabia. But the point is that if we really wanted to be energy self-sufficient, we could develop the reserves in western North Dakota. Okay, this is an article from the Bismarck Tribune from just about a year and a half ago.
32 billion barrels is what I'm saying here.
Yeah, Lee Price, that was the name of the guy I was trying to remember. Leigh, Lee Price, a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, published a study in 1999 that estimated the Bakken Shales formation. I was right, 400 billion barrels of oil.
400. Oh, yeah, you're right, because I see later on in here he originally said 32, and now it's up to 300 to 400.
Yeah. And the proven reserves in Saudi Arabia is something on the order of about 150 billion barrels. So if we think that Saudi Arabia sort of like has us by the short hairs when it comes to our energy future and our energy security, that's a lie. That is just factually untrue. Mm-hmm. We have, according to Lee Price, who incidentally died, and I'll have to check the date on that, but his study, if it's correct, shows that the United States inside the continental U.S., not even, you know, Alaska's North Slope or anything like that, has more than doubled the proven reserves in Saudi Arabia. So why aren't we exploiting that? We keep hearing.
I don't know,
that
because supposedly there's a whole bunch of oil in the Gulf, Gulf.
Mm-hmm. And when you combine that with the reserves in Alaska that we're not supposed to be able to touch because they don't want us to disturb the mudflats for the caribou, we really don't need the Middle East. We don't need Central Asia.
No.
But the guys who rule the world, or think they do, it's not about securing America's energy policy, mm-hmm. and not about the national security aspects of controlling our own destiny, mm-hmm. as far as energy is going. They want to control everyone else's destiny as well, which is why we're messing about in the Middle East and in Central Asia.
Can I get on my soapbox for a minute?
Please do.
You know, one of the things that bothers me is this whole push for alternative fuels. And one of those alternative fuels that is being used now is corn. And consequently, everything made from corn and the corn ingredients in a lot of foodstuffs.
Mm-hmm.
All of those items are going way up in price.
Yep.
And some of it's translating to the farmer, but not nearly enough of it is translating to the farmer. But it is definitely hitting you, mm-hmm. and me and all of our listeners in the pocketbook when they go to the store to buy anything with corn oil, with powdered corn products. I mean, there's corn in tons of stuff.
Right.
Corn fructose is in a lot of foods. And I really don't see that is making any difference when it comes to the price at the pump. And it doesn't make any difference when it comes to your miles per gallon. I mean, it's not any cheaper to use, so why use it? Mm-hmm. Why not use the oil that is here instead of taking the tillable land that we have that,
right.
frankly, is going down in acreage every year and making it essentially a big fuel.
There was another interesting unintended consequence of this drive to convert tillable land into fuel for our gasoline tanks, and that is that growing corn requires additional applications of nitrogen-based fertilizer,
mm-hmm.
which, when the rains come, means more of that nitrogen fertilizer washes into our watersheds and ultimately leads to algae blooms, mm-hmm. in various waterways and the Gulf of Mexico, which decreases the production of fish and other industries that rely on fish, you know, shellfish and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It basically is causing more water pollution and killing off the usability of our water resources for food. So there are unintended consequences in that respect as well. It is, and on top of all of this, while this is going on, now we've got the powerful chairman of the U.S. Energy and Commerce Committee, John Dingell of Michigan, Representative Dingell, is proposing a 50-cent tax on gasoline to help fund a battle against climate change. This is new as of the end of last week. U.S. drivers would pay a 50-cent tax on each gallon of gasoline to encourage less fuel use and cut greenhouse gas emissions. That was draft legislation to fight global warming introduced on Thursday.
You know, it reminds me of the old sin tax note. I don't mean S-Y-N-T-A-X.
I mean
S-I-N-T-A-X. The notion that in order to keep people from smoking, they're going to put taxes on cigarettes. Well, that doesn't seem to be helping, does it?
No, and what it does is it makes the government dependent on that bad behavior, because then when people actually do quit using their cars or quit smoking as much, mm-hmm. then the government needs to really cast about for alternate sources of revenue, which is really goofy, because then, you know, the government's in the business of officially discouraging but privately encouraging,
mm-hmm.
Behaviors that are self-destructive.
Encouraged to do self-destructive behaviors, to consume, to have consumer debt out the wazoo, and not to produce anything.
Right.
It's China that's producing everything that we're consuming now.
Glenn Beck made an excellent point during his program this past week, and You know, some things Glenn Beck is ate up, but he is very insightful on others. He said during World War II, when America was a producer nation,
mm-hmm.
our families, our fathers, our grandfathers were encouraged to save scraps of metal that would be melted down and turned into tanks and airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, and when we were, you know, to try to help the economy, we were encouraged to save and to cut back. Now we're told to go out, you know, in order to help the economy, we're told to go out and buy stuff at Target.
Yes. Oh, I can go in one better.
Because we're totally a consumer nation.
I can go in one better. Not mm-hmm. only are we told to go out and buy consumer goods that are made in other countries,
mm-hmm.
but we are also told, don't you dare, in some cases, there are some neighborhoods, don't you dare plant a garden in your backyard. The yard that you own,
mm-hmm.
you can't have a garden back there because there's city ordinances against it. What about the old days when you were encouraged to have a victory garden?
Right, right.
Everybody grow your own food.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a different world from the one our parents and grandparents lived in. And it is really just, at times it almost seems as though we're living in some alternate universe in which nonsense is sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sense and anti-sense, too, it makes sense if you're a genetic scientist.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, the whole thing about the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and that, you know, securing our nation's energy future, the national security implications of securing the Middle East is frankly a bunch of hooey.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's all about our energy resources and our energy supply, we've got it here on the continental United States if we choose to develop it. The fact that we're not hearing about it means that there's no official plan to do so because the guys in charge don't want to do that. They want to make sure that we not only control our own energy resources, they're controlling everyone else's as well. And they're doing it using American boys and girls as muscle, blood, muscle, and bone to go out and get the job done, to secure the territory needed that we need to control in order to control everyone else's energy resources. And that is really a sad thing to say. And some of you may find that an offensive statement. And my intent is not to offend. I know that there are, and don't for a moment think that we discount the existence of radical Islamic groups who want to kill us. We know that they're out there.
We know there are.
Yes. But boy, you go back to 600 BC and the ancient Chinese warlord Sun Tzu knew that you basically attack an enemy by following the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that we have to fight them over there so we won't have to fight them over here is bollocks. It's nuts. It's
mm-hmm.
crazy. Because the easiest path, the path of least resistance for an Islamic terrorist right now is coming across our Mexican border.
Yes.
Yeah. Another story in the news just yesterday of somebody arrested for taking Chinese illegals across the Mexican border, driving them all the way to New York. It's crazy. I mean, the surge that we had posted, in which we'd posted National Guard troops on the Mexican border last year,
mm-hmm.
you know, Operation, I can't even remember the name of the operation now. I thought I had it. 6,000 National Guard troops were posted to the border, but with no ammunition for their weapons
mm-hmm.
and rules of engagement that basically amounted to run away has ended, and those troops have been redeployed. I'm just absolutely astounded. The only portion of the wall that's been built is like a 2 or 3 mile section, which was basically constructed for photo ops. It's basically a set.
Is that the Boeing section that you're talking about or the actual physical wall?
Because that's the actual physical wall.
You know, the story that came out last week, remember Boeing was, I think it was Boeing.
Working on the high tech.
Exactly. Yeah. The radar fence where you if you went across all
right.
of these. And I assume that some sort of unmanned aerial vehicles are going to be manning that. Well, now they're saying that there's a software glitch and somehow it's not working right.
Yeah, yeah. We couldn't get it online because there's a software glitch.
Oh, in the meantime, who's disappeared from the news? Where's Dick Cheney?
He has been awfully quiet lately, hasn't he?
He has been.
Yeah. I don't
Anytime
know that means
Dick
anything.
Cheney gets really quiet, you got to worry.
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Well, don't know about that. Again, keep your eye on Myanmar and just do a little background check on what's happening with the military governments of Myanmar and Thailand and any deals that you might see being struck between the National Oil Company of Thailand, PTT, with any of the big Western oil companies,
mm-hmm.
because that would indicate perhaps some intervention, perhaps some encouragement of the the unrest that's taking place in Myanmar. It is not unheard of, and again, I know this is an uncomfortable thing for many to hear, but it is not unheard of for our CIA to use evangelical Christian groups as fronts to stir up unrest in countries
I think it's pretty well accepted that Operation Blessing was a front for the CIA.
Operation Blessing, but there were also several groups that were operating in Latin America during the 60s and 70s that were on their faces, on the surface, appeared to be evangelical Christian missionary groups, but behind the scenes were actually CIA fronts, and I think that's just despicable. So it would not be the first time. Not saying that there's any evidence that this is taking place, but it is interesting that Buddhist monks appear to be leading the unrest in Myanmar. Who knows? I mean, there's a whole class of people that appears to operate above the rules, or believe that they have the right. They seem to believe that they have the right to operate above the rules.
I just find it so interesting how there is a fascination with the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
He's been over here in the United States a number of times. His mm-hmm. nephew has a business in Bloomington, Indiana, where I used to live. He was there a lot. His nephew, I mean, there's a huge Tibetan center there. There's a Tibetan center here. They were here not that long ago doing a mandala. I mean, we're not talking about traditional Buddhists. This is tantric Buddhism.
Right, which is...
sort of part Hindu.
Yeah, and it has...
devil worship.
Yeah, it has some aspects to it that people aren't aware of. I mean, most of what we Westerners know about the flavor of Buddhism practiced by the Dalai Lama is, you know, peaceful and, you know, passive mm-hmm. and loving and tolerant and so forth. And he seems to be regarded as this man of supreme holiness on a par with perhaps even the Pope mm-hmm. In the way the Pope is regarded by Roman Catholics. And that's not really what it's about. Dave Emery, who is I've fallen way behind on keeping up with his shows. He's done a number of excellent programs on his For the Record program on the Dalai Lama and what they get into. But there is an apocalyptic aspect of that type of Buddhism that prophesies a final conflict between the forces of Buddhism and the forces of Christianity and Islam, mm-hmm. with the Buddhists waging war and winning against the forces of Islam and Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you know, astonishing to a lot of people who, again, perceive Buddhism as being this very peaceful and serene belief system in which peace is the supreme order.
Exactly. And I bring that up because when you hear that monks are behind, demonstrations in Myanmar, don't think to yourself, oh, you know, they're against war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's not the case at all. We have to talk with some folks who know more about tantric Buddhism sometime, because I'm coming at this from supreme ignorance, just knowing very little about it. But just some mm-hmm. of the details, again, really contradicting the public face that is presented by the Dalai Lama.
Very much so. Well, the second part in our teaser tonight is Amaro Decaf. Well, I'm trying to cut down on my caffeine over this weekend, so I had to make a decaf. But the end of this month, which is today,
mm-hmm.
not tomorrow, no matter what a certain person we work with at Zimmer, he keeps saying September 31st.
Yeah.
But today is the final day of September, and there is an agreement, an SPP, that I've got a link to, and we'll put it in the show notes, that Jerome Corsi has been talking about with you, probably, but he's been writing about it at World Net Daily for a long time now. And a lot of the agreements that they have in this document are supposed to be in place by the end of September 2007.
Well,
that's today.
There was a report that was to be delivered on the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the North American Union
mm-hmm.
to members of Congress by today. Now, I don't know that that has happened. I've been kind of following this because of the conversations that I've had with Jerry Corsi over the last year.
Well, a tangential gentleman was also on Glenn Beck, whom we spoke about a few minutes ago, talking about this very thing, saying that he believed Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
And he claimed he had an actual news item to back it up, as part of this group was going to present his belief to Congress that we are in an economic crisis. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with China dumping dollars. And the fact right now that the Canadian dollar is stronger than the U.S. dollar,
that one out. I mean, that's like saying Cubs win the World Series. That's just mind-boggling.
Honey, that could happen this year. Oh. The world, it's topsy-turvy.
You know, it'll two outs in the final game with the Cubs about to clinch it for the first time since 1908.
Adult is going to run onto the field.
Yeah, and... Yeah. And Wrigley Field will blow up or something.
Yeah, we decided we're going to get a chupacabra and we're going to take it there. So yeah, we'll be fine there. But what's going on is that the North American Union plan, which is in the SPP document, is about to take place. Now, when I say about to, it doesn't mean the next few days. But I tell you what, as Jesus says, it is at the very doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for anyone who understands the significance of the one world government in Christian end times prophecy, you've got to look at this and say, ooh, this is significant. This is a group that is chaired by former Senator Sam Nunn, who's been a player in Washington, D.C. for a long time. But other names that you would know as part of this think tank, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, includes guys like Richard Armitage, the guy who actually outed Valerie Plame, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, Harold Brown, former defense secretary, former defense secretary William Cohen, and Henry Kissinger, all part of this group, were in the process of preparing a report on the benefits of integrating the United States with Canada and Mexico into one political, economic, and security bloc. Now, the security aspect looks to us as though it's already taken place. When you look at the logo for U.S. NORTHCOM, which is the Northern Military Command of the United States military, the little logo includes a map of the entire North American continent. Now, the Mexicans might have something to say about that.
You'd think so,
But they haven't, to the best of my knowledge. The Canadians don't appear to care because they can turn all of their budget, you know, domestic product into socialized medicine because they don't have to pay for a military, seeing as how their military is basically ours. The report was supposed to be presented to the U.S. Congress by September 30th. Don't know whether that has actually happened. I do know that within the past 7 days, U.S. Representative Virgil Good of Virginia, Republican from Virginia, has introduced a resolution, which is now in House Transportation Committee, that the expressing the sense of the Congress that the United States should not enter into an agreement with to create a North American free trade, a NAFTA superhighway, or enter into a North American Union. Now, and Good was quoted as saying later, and this was an article written by Jerry Corsi, that when they asked U.S. Secretary of Transportation Mary Peters about the existence of a North American NAFTA superhighway, she said, no, there's no such thing. It's a conspiracy theory being propagated on the internet, blah, blah, blah. And then she went on to describe a network of highways designed to take to expedite transport from Mexico through the United States and up into Canada, which is exactly what Representative Good was talking about.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's not just the one going through Kansas City. There's another one that's going to go through Indiana.
Right.
And
go to Detroit.
Mexico trucks, the Mexican trucks, are on our highways now.
Right. Now, if you're not familiar with this North American superhighway concept or the North American Union concept or the Amero, and we'll get to that as part of the title in just a minute, the concept, as Jerry Corsi's been explaining it, and as his research has led him to understand it, the super container ships that are sailing from Chinese ports now, carrying goods for the American markets, are so big that they can no longer offload in places like Long Beach or Los Angeles or Portland on the west coast of the U.S. And besides, even if they do, in order to reach eastern markets, they still have to cross the country on train or, more likely, on 18-wheeler, which means they've got to cross the Rocky Mountains, they've got to cross the Alleghenies, the Appalachians, whatever, and there's a lot of expense involved there, not to mention the fact that you're paying unionized longshoremen in the United States ports a higher wage than they have to pay longshoremen working in Mexico, which has just finished a new port at Lázaro Cárdenas, which is capable of holding these larger ships. Now, the plan, as it's being put together and pulled together by a loosely organized or loosely affiliated group of business leaders and politicians is to bring the Chinese vessels into Lázaro Cárdenas and then load them onto either container trucks, flatbed trailers holding one or two containers, mm-hmm. or onto rail cars, where they then come up through Mexico, cross the border at Laredo, and travel on to San Antonio, where some will be offloaded and then rerouted to points east and west, or all the way up into Kansas City, where there now exists, in the form of the Kansas City Smart Port, an inland port specifically designed to take these containers that have been shipped into the United States from China, routed through Mexico, and then dispersed east, west, north, and south from Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kansas, and in fact, Mexico has a customs office in Kansas City. The reason for doing this is that, first of all, cheaper labor at Lázaro Cárdenas. Secondly, cheaper transportation costs on Mexican trucks, which now have access to American highways if the transportation department gets its way. Thirdly, they're not scanned at the border or checked for, anything dangerous, because the cargoes will have been cleared and inspected in the Far East by so-called trusted traders.
Exactly. Now, may I jump in really
Please.
Quickly? In the news for the last month, mm-hmm. it's been recalls,
yep.
all summer, recalls, dog food, now it's toys,
yep.
recalls all over the place. What are we hearing? China's got to do something about all of these products that have ingredients that are harmful to consumers in the United States. I just heard this a couple of days ago, that there is a deal being worked out to make sure that they are inspected before mm-hmm. they hit the United States.
Right. And that's part of this whole plan, that these containers will be inspected before they're sealed at the port of Shanghai mm-hmm. or wherever they leave, and then not inspected again until they arrive in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Or San Antonio, which is another inland port. Another one at Duluth.
And it's not just products that may be harmful to you or me or to our kids or our dogs.
No.
It's what? It could be full of military guys.
It could be full of a
nuclear. There could be anything in there.
Exactly right. So this is what the elites who comprise the North American Competitiveness Council have been pushing for. The NACC is sort of the body that is pushing this security and prosperity partnership, which you can look up online, by the way, at spp.gov. Mm-hmm. It is a division of the Department of Commerce, which has been entering into treaties with mm-hmm. Canada and Mexico without the consent and approval, with the advice and consent, that's the phrase, of the United States Senate, which is required by the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've been harmonizing our trade restrictions.
Harmonizing
our environmental requirements with Canada and Mexico.
They also have an avian flu plan.
Yeah.
Now, there was just a story. If you look at my site, SharonKGilbert.com, we'll put a link to this story. It was a World Net Daily, in fact, story of a big, what appears to be, flu outbreak in Mexico.
Oh, yes. I didn't read that.
Ah, yes. Yeah. That's brand new.
Well, that is important, especially as these Mexican trucks take to the American highways.
Mm-hmm.
Which, incidentally, is something that the U.S. Congress has been trying to stop, and the U.S. Department of Transportation is essentially ignoring the will of Congress. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution by a vote of, it was something ridiculous, like 496 in favor to 4 opposed. 496 to 4, basically withdrawing the funding for the Department of Transportation.
Is that both houses?
No, I mean, it's...
Is it only 435?
Okay, my mistake. Then it's 396 to 4. I'm sorry. 396 to 4. Yeah, I just conflated it a little bit there. And
why shouldn't you?
Yes. It was 1,001. 1,001.
I said tickety two. I said that.
I'll put a link to that article in the show notes so you can
Good.
See it. Because we never see votes that lopsided for anything.
No.
I mean, you could say, you know, be it resolved that the United States Congress says that kicking babies is bad, and you'll still get, you know, a closer vote than you got on this
exactly.
Mexican truck vote. So 396 to 4 was the vote, and the department to basically defund the program so that the Department of Transportation would not be able to administer this so-called trial program to allow Mexican trucks on American highways. And Department of Transportation was like, meh. And then the Senate voted And it was something like 74 to 24 with a couple of abstentions. It was again, a very lopsided vote. And again, the Department of Transportation is like, meh. So it's like, wait a minute. Don't we have a system of checks and balances in government here, whereby the three branches of government keep the other two branches kind of reined in? The executive branch under this president, and I would argue that he's merely continuing a trend that
was started in the previous administration.
Clearly, believes that he has the power, that this administration has the power to make law simply by decree. Bill Clinton did it. Paul Begala's famous quote, mm-hmm. "Stroke of the pen, law of the land," kind of cool, mm-hmm. has been taken to a new level by George W. Bush with his signing statements. And these laws that are being basically passed down through the harmonization process of the Security and Prosperity Partnership.
I saw an interesting fact yesterday. 40% of people alive today in America have only known either a Bush or a Clinton in office.
Yeah. And Newt Gingrich was quoted again as saying that he believes there's an 80% chance that Hillary will be the next president.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's an interesting story that just caught my eye the other day that George W. Bush has opened quiet back-channel communications with Hillary about Iraq, asking her to kind of temper her rhetoric on Iraq so that she can continue to govern with a firm hand when it comes to Iraq once she takes over. You know, just, again, looking at the odds and seeing
who's likely. And, of course, after that will be Jeb.
Jeb or the younger Bush who will have, you know, some time to get a little seasoning. Isn't there a younger George Bush who's like a real handsome kid? Who's
Jeb's son?
Could be.
One of them has a son who's part Hispanic.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking
of.
So, yeah, anyway, they could keep swapping back and forth. Jeb would have to be a pretty attractive candidate for conservatives, you know, in the next, say, 2012 or 2016. Mm-hmm. But, of course, we know that a month after the election in 2012, the whole thing comes to an end anyway. So, you know. The Amaro, getting back to that, part of the process of this harmonization, integration of the three countries in North America is a belief that we need to eliminate the barriers to trade posed not only by our borders but by our currencies. The chairman of the Bank of Canada, which is their equivalent of the Fed, a guy named David Dodge, was quoted mm-hmm. at a speech in Chicago earlier this year as saying as much.
Mm-hmm.
We need to eliminate the barriers to free trade posed by not only our borders, but because he believes there should be a free flow of labor, but mm-hmm. then also believes that a harmonization of the currencies would be a good thing as well. Now, if Alan Greenspan or Ben Bernanke had said something like that, it would have been big news, but because it's just that Canadian guy, what does it matter? Well,
yeah.
You know, hey, take a look at where the Canadian dollar is trading right now versus the U.S. dollar.
Exactly.
When I was selling steel pipe, it was about 57 to 65 cents Canadian to a U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. Now the Canadian dollar is trading higher than mm-hmm. the U.S. dollar.
You know, as I mentioned earlier, China, of course, has tons of dollars. I mean, they have physical dollars that they mm-hmm. keep.
Yeah.
And they are have been signaling for a while that they're about to dump those dollars, which means that China uh-huh. and countries like that will no longer trade in dollars.
Yeah, we've been talking
they're
about this for a while.
They're going to trade in euros.
Sure. And we've been talking about this for a while. And look, if we were private investors who were in the foreign currencies market, why would we want to hold dollars? They're dropping in value. They've mm-hmm. been dropping consistently for the past 8 years.
You may as well just sit and start tearing little pieces off your dollars, folks, because yeah. they're losing ground.
And I think most of us out here in the heartland really don't know. I know I don't really have a firm understanding of what this means to us in the world stage, because we're kind of insulated. And as long as we can still, you know, watch college football on Saturday, pro football on Sunday, and got the World Series to look forward to, you know, what happens on the foreign currency market really doesn't matter that much. Mm-hmm. But it does ultimately, because it's going to have some pretty big changes on the way we're governed and the strength of our economy. We keep hearing, oh, it's the best economy ever because the Dow Jones is trading at an all-time high. That is such a false number and such a false indicator.
I know. And the national debt, no matter what they tell you it is,
yep.
is in the tens of trillions of dollars.
The account
higher.
Oh, yeah. I've talked about this with a couple of economics guys who just say that it's really astounding that the U.S. government gets away with using the accounting practices that it outlawed for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Enron, well, essentially it's Enron accounting being done by the U.S. government. That's what's going on here. And they'll say, well, you know, the deficit is actually this. No, no, it's on the high side of like $52 trillion is the U.S. debt. It's
and run
ridiculous.
Accounting.
Yeah. So that is, that's a familiar theme. If you've listened to PID radio in the past, you've heard us talk about the economy before. And it's not because we just like to be pessimistic. It's just because we don't like being lied to. We're grown-ups. We can handle the truth. But we also know as grown-ups that we have to have as much in our account at the end of the month as we need to pay our bills. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. government for years has been writing blank checks, writing rubber checks, writing checks that can't be cashed. Mm-hmm. And when you come right down to it, the only way we've been able to continue funding the war in Afghanistan and Iraq is because the Japanese and the Chinese especially have been willing to buy up U.S. debt in the form of treasury bills. We've been fighting the war against Islamic terror with Chinese money.
Mm-hmm.
How long will that last? How long will that go on?
Not very long. And because we are doing it, we've had to make a lot of deals with China that, frankly, they're not in the interest of American people.
Mm-mm. And one final note here. We got just a couple of minutes left. Boy, this has gone really quickly.
I know. You know, before you and I started the show, we said, okay, well, we've got about 58 minutes to fill. Oh, it's been a while since we've done this. Well, I guess we just jumped right back in, didn't we?
You found an interesting article about the biochip market and how foreign manufacturers are really making a run at the biochip market, which to this point had been controlled by American scientists and manufacturers.
Yes.
What's that all about?
You know, I'm still doing some research on it, but apparently that's one of the things that we actually have produced here. And if you'll remember during the Clinton administration, early in the Clinton administration, we were still producing a lot of chips, you know, all kinds of computer chips here. And a lot of our computer chip science went to China during the Clinton years. Well, apparently the Japanese and some other Asian marketers have decided that they're going to get into the biochip marketing. And this is an up-and-coming mm-hmm. Sector.
Yeah, it's a growth industry.
It's a huge science where they take these chips and they use them to examine DNA and all kinds of applications. It's when I thought biochip, I thought, okay, well, then it's like, you know, Bionic Man or something. No, they're all over the place and they're being used now.
Yeah, and it's not just research labs that are making use of these anymore. Pretty soon these will be available. Well, I mean, in one respect, they're already available to consumers. It's becoming almost common to chip your dog, chip your cat, and take them to the vet now.
Well, according to the article, chips are being developed for clinical diagnostics to determine the genetic makeup of patients and their tumors, and they're also developed to identify species quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let me repeat that. They identify species quickly. Mm. For example, with pests and food products or potential illegal imports, it goes on and on, there have been patents on new species. That's exactly where my brain went when I read that line. Yeah. I thought, okay, is human human?
And how much human do you have to be human?
Exactly.
Yeah.
With the tinkering that's going on in the DNA right now, you need to know what is what and who is what.
And if you've not read Sharon's novel, The Armageddon Strain, with her, let's just say the biochip plays a very important role in that novel. And
which is why I just sort of, the minute I saw the headline, I thought, well, I better see what's going on with this. So we saved it to last because we, frankly, are still doing a lot of research on it. But we welcome your input as well. And as we get to that, we need to wrap up, honey, because it's getting close to the end of that hour again.
That's true. And, of course, your input is welcome at, we now have Gmail. Gmail.
We're going to get a PID radio email account, but give us a little time on that.
Yeah. So tell you what, we'll
set one up.
We'll set one up, but the show notes and the link to the email address will be at PIDradio.com. Once again, PIDradio.com is back online, and we will have the link for the link for you to subscribe via RSS feed for your download to iTunes, your MP3 player, what have you. There will also be a little player on the site so you can play the shows right there from the website.
So we'll create a couple of email accounts, and we'll post that along with everything else, how you can write to us. And we want to thank everybody who's prayed for us and sent us emails over the last few months. We've made so many friends out there, and we can't imagine life without you.
Yeah, and thank you to Daniel for keeping the forum up and running and for Amen. All of the members of that community that kept going. It's an interesting and peculiar group. And
aren't
glad
they a
you guys
fun
are,
bunch?
Yeah,
and
so
peculiar is a good word.
In a good
use.
Word. And you'll see us weighing in there more frequently in the weeks ahead. Again, PIDradio.com for the show notes and the links. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
This is PID Radio.